Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with a couple of people in the Houston food world I think you'll want to hear from. Let me introduce y'all separately so people can hear your voices. They are the owners of Edo, a bakery in East Downtown, and Auden, a restaurant in Montrose. Kurth and Shinoy, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Kripa Shinoy, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you both for doing this. You know, look, anytime I have a married couple or two people who've been in a relationship for a long time on the show, I always like to ask, tell me how you met. Like, we'll talk about the restaurants and your professional lives, but I always think it's kind of fun to ask people how they met.
You want to go first, Kripa, or you want me to?
Oh, you can.
Well, I think it was probably 10 or 12 years ago. I grew up with Kripa's cousin in Houston, and Kripa obviously was living outside of the country in India, and we're both in the culinary field. I was working as a line cook for Michael White in New York City at this really nice French restaurant. So then, my friend was just like, hey, I have this cousin that she's in pastry, and you guys would probably get along, but it wasn't like a romantic kind of matchmaking thing. It was just like a, hey, you guys should be friends. And then we pretty much were just like kind of Facebook pen pals for like a couple of years. And then randomly, I was going to India to visit some friends and family. And then we decided to like physically meet. And then when we met, I think it hit off for me.
I mean, we were married in 3 months, so we definitely hit it off.
Yeah. When we met, like, so I met her on like a Saturday, and then on that Sunday, so Kripa and I are part of the same Indian linguistic community. We speak Konkani as our mother tongue. And it's a very South Asian tradition to when you meet people, your families just have to have lunch or something, you know. So I was like, hey, I'm going to be in your hometown for a couple of days. I'd love for you to meet my dad. My dad was traveling with me. And then, I'd love to meet your parents. Let's just hang out. When we grabbed a drink the night before, just to kind of like, personally kind of connect as friends. And then the next day when I met her parents, I asked them for their blessing. Because I kind of knew, on my end, I kind of knew that, she was the one. And, everything just clicked. And
yeah, I think we had a feeling before we even met that, we had feelings for each other. And what's funny is his dad, when he met me now after everything's over, was like, I was secretly hoping that you guys would end up together. But Kirtan kept telling me, back off, dad. I don't want any pressure. Don't say anything, blah, blah, blah. And then the night he met me, he came back to the hotel room and dad was like, so when do you think you want to say anything? And he was like, yesterday.
Something along those. I felt like it was more romantic in my head. Everything was just easy. I think we both were in our late 20s or mid late 20s. And I think we had our fair share of, I would say not so successful past relationships. So I think, once we finally met and everything was just so easy and effortless and, it seemed like we were family without ever meeting, And I don't play the long distance game. I've been burnt on that type of thing before. So I was like, hey, I'm not going to play long distance with you. If, let's get married. If it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, then at least we tried.
Yeah.
Well, and clearly it's working out because you've been married for a long time now and you had your first child last year. So life is good.
Yeah. Yes. My daughter's actually, today's her birthday. She's 1 year,
year old. Well, there you go. All right. Yeah. So, Kurthan, let's have the professional conversation. As you said, you grew up in Houston. You worked in New York. How did you kind of become interested in professional cooking and wind up, of all places in New York?
Well, I think at the time I was in, I went to, my undergraduate was at University of Texas, San Antonio. After that was over, I still was kind of lost in my head in my early 20s, like what I wanted to do. I've always enjoyed cooking. Growing up in a South Asian, household, it's just you're pretty much always hanging out in the kitchen or the living room after you ate, So it was just a natural vocation that I was able to kind of, steep towards. And even when I was in college, After college, you know, always hosting dinner parties, you know, hanging out with my friends, cooking, grilling, you know, anything that I could do to resemble anything in the culinary field. So my parents actually suggested, you know, you should go to culinary school and you'll be happier and you don't have to worry about waking up and, you know, having regrets. So at the
I mean,
time,
that's very progressive for South Asian parents, right? Like I think they're a little bit like Jewish parents in the sense that only certain professions are
yeah,
preferred.
I'm sure. Like, so I definitely grew up with a lot of the Jewish community, and so engineer, doctor, lawyer. I mean, these are I don't know if it's financially motivational. Like, I mean, that's why they're preaching it, but I think what they're preaching is, like, you know, they want their children to be established as much as they can without a lot of problems, you know. So I think, you know, the mentality I think of a lot of South Asians is that, you know, the more money that you're able to earn, the more prestige you'll get, and then the less problems that you'll have, you know. Not that they ever worry about mental health, but, you know, the idea is, you know, my dad is a small business owner, and, you know, my dad's brother are physicians. So I think he kind of knew that, you know, his children don't have to be doctors or lawyers. They could pretty much do what they want and still be successful.
All right. And Kripa, how did you become a pastry chef?
Well, my mom was not as progressive. She was like, can you look at other options? So basically, I did my undergrad in business school. I went to business school. I did my graduation in that, and then I was in a crossroad too, wondering what to do next. But I had a couple other options along with culinary arts, and that was interiors. But it was always creativity oriented. I never wanted to do a typical 9 to 5 job or a super professional career like most of my friends and family back home in India. And Kirtan probably grew up in a way more progressive setting because he grew up in the US, but for me, it was more traditional. So my parents were supportive, but not as excited when I chose the culinary field. But my dad actually has a small batch handmade ice cream shop, and he's been in business for 40 years. So that was my inspiration right off the bat. Me and my dad always loved cooking. We loved feeding. You know, we're a very hospitable family in general when it came to hosting and, you know, just big meals and eating, and everything was around food and dessert growing up. So I think it came very naturally to me to be in the kitchen. And then no one was surprised when I made a career out of it.
All right. And then Kirtan, like, how did you make your, like, so you went to culinary school. How did you wind up working in New York? Or maybe more to the point, like, what were, you know, a couple of the places you worked in New York that kind of shaped the path that you're on now?
Well, I mean, I think about that all the time, you know, in terms of in your early 20s, I think because I grew up in Houston, I never really got exposed to the cultural metropolitan aspect of Houston because you're pretty much in grade school. You're only going to the areas and neighborhoods that your family kind of runs you through. You know, you're not really you're not like I was never truly an adult in Houston. So I'm not organically going out, you know, reading publications saying, oh, let's check out this spot, let's check out this spot. You know, you have that thirst to kind of branch out of your city. And so, you know, New York, I think, is always on everyone's radar in terms of if, you know, the cliche, if you could make it there. And I think just I wanted to be around people that were highly motivated. And, you know, I lived in San Antonio for 6 years. I lived in Houston for a lot longer. And I think I was just kind of like, I wanted to just branch out. The culinary school that I ended up choosing actually had a joint international Italian program. So I went to school at the International Culinary Center, formerly the French Culinary Institute. Now it's, I think, bought out by ICE is the culinary.
I think it's ICC, right? Oh, I don't remember.
But anyways, so the idea was, hey, I can spend 9 weeks in New York, and then I can spend a little bit longer in Italy, about 3 4 months. And I ended up staying longer in Italy. And then I was like, you know what? I really want to go back to New York. I just enjoyed the feeling of that city. Just working your tail off, and, you know, not having, you know, just having good tunnel vision. That's pretty much how I got kind of attracted to New York.
And then what were maybe one or two of the restaurants you worked at when you were up there?
So I worked for the Alta Maria Group, where I was at Vaucluse, which was on 63rd and Park, not there anymore, but when Michael White was a part of the Alta Maria group, I worked at iFiori and Vaucluse was two places, I think, that definitely shaped the way my cooking technique resembles. And then also just the organization of, you know, keeping everything from your starting day to ending at the night. I think that the kind of shaped the way I thought. And a really good restaurant, honorable mention, there's a very talented chef, Scott Gruy. And he used to be the sous chef at Charlie Palmer's Oriole in close by Times Square. And he opened this restaurant called Sutton Inn. It lasted for a couple of years before he moved on to other things. And that was like the first restaurant I worked at where it was definitely fine dining technique, really good attention to detail, good knife skills, good, like just observational, you know. I would say when people think of a chef, that's what I think of.
Yeah. And Kripa, I know you worked in New York too, right? After you guys got married and you moved to the States.
Yes. So I basically got most of my French technique training in New York. I feel like before that, I went to culinary school only for food production, which was more savory. So I didn't have a lot of pastry experience at all till I moved to the U.S. I did a lot of novelty and specialty cakes back home for about 5 years. I ran my own studio in India, but all the French entremets, all kinds of semifreddos, mousses, everything I've learned is at Maria, which then held a 2 Michelin star. But my bosses there were just amazing. They taught me everything from technique to mass production of that technique. And, you know, just basic discipline and everything. So I'm very thankful for having those couple years of experience under their tutelage, for sure.
Kirthan, when did you decide that the time was right to come back to Houston to open your own place?
Well, I think it coincidentally happened right before the pandemic. But I mean, we had no knowledge that there was going to be a pandemic. It was around 2019. We were at the task of re-signing our lease, I think, right, Kripa? At our apartment.
Yes.
And I found this, like, it was like, I call it the gold pot at the rainbow. It was just such a accidental apartment that we should not have gotten. It was in the Upper East Side. It was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, you know, in our price range. In the snow, I had to go talk to that real estate agent because he texted me saying, this apartment's going to go today. You need to sign a lease. Let's do it. And then so we did that. We really liked our apartment. But then when we were trying to re-sign our lease, it was, I think, a 2-year lease or something like that. And then it just kind of scared me thinking, okay, well, in 2 years, we're going to be kind of like in our early 30s. Do we want to set a foundation in New York or do we want to set a foundation in Houston? You know, my parents are still here. They're still around and they live in Sugar Land. And Kripa's parents are in the capital city, Panjim, in Goa. So we both decided we have to live in one of those cities because we want to have a relationship with our parents and hypothetically our children can have a relationship with their grandparents. So then, you know, I don't think Kripa wanted to go back to India. So I was like, okay, well, then we have to go back to Houston. So to make a long story long, it was pretty much, I think we didn't want to set a foundation in New York. We just wanted to learn as much as we could. And it just happened that, you know, the time.
All right. So you decide to come back to Houston. How quickly did you kind of develop the ideas behind Auden and Edo? Like, did you come back to Houston knowing you were going to open your own places? Or did you think like maybe you would work around a little bit and then go from there?
I don't know if we had a set plan, to be honest with you. I think in reality, we wanted things to kind of organically happen. You know, my parents and I, with my parents being they're in real estate management and they have their own small business as well. So they kind of told me like, hey, you guys need to start location scouting. You need to figure out your concepts. You need to do all that stuff. But we just really wanted to cook. So we started our own LLC. We did private catering at people's houses. We just wanted to, I would say we didn't want to open up a place in Houston. We just wanted to kind of be here, work here and see where Houston took us. But I don't know if Kripa thought something different.
I know that the end goal was to be small business owners, but we didn't know how quickly that would, you know, come into fruition, we basically just started doing what we could to keep our heads above water when we got in, especially when the pandemic hit. We were doing weekend pop-ups. We were basically posting on Instagram, hand delivering all the 5-course meals we were making each family. So we just went with the flow, and then Edo happened pretty organically in that process.
Yeah. Talk about Edo, because that was your first concept, and it's the bakery and it's the coffee shop and it's so approachable. So yeah, talk about kind of how that came together and how you conceived of it.
We came across Amin and Neville, our business partners with Blackwater Roasters, through some common friends. We were introduced to them because they were looking for kitchen consultants for another project at the time. And then they introduced us to the space in Edo. And we thought, okay, why don't we, Kirtan and me, do a small sit-down cafe, and they can do like an all-day, not even a cafe, kind of like a bistro. And they wanted to do their own roastery concept as well. So we thought, okay, we could split the construction costs and, you know, start two small businesses. But then when the pandemic hit, we had to change the dynamics of the entire business because no one was going out. We didn't know how long that would last. So we said, okay, why don't we join hands? You guys do the coffee, supply us with the beans, and then we shall handle the kitchen and operations overall and just have a window, because everyone was just picking up food and leaving, and it would be easier to handle versus a sit down. We don't know what the future holds at that point. So I think that's how that came into place in, you know, given the situation during the pandemic. And then everything just fell into place as and when time passed.
Yeah. Kirtan, talk about the menu a little bit, because I mean, obviously you've got the pastries, but I mean, you're doing some savory food too.
Yeah, we, obviously, Kripa and I are South Asian, right? So we try to incorporate some kind of flavor profiles to that. We do a nihari kolache in Edo, which nihari pretty much is a beef stew, very traditionally served with a paratha flatbread. So what we like, we thought, you know, hey, in Houston, if you want to survive, you have to make a kolache. People like, you know, I agree. Breakfast taco and kolache are two things that you just have to have if you're going to have any savory components, right? So, I mean, we obviously don't have any Hispanic heritage in us. So I think taco was something that we didn't want to kind of force upon us.
Especially with Brothers Taco and, you know, a bunch of amazing tacos available around us. We didn't want to.
And we love Brothers. Like, I mean, we'll probably be at Brothers more or just as much as Edo before, you know. It's one of those things that it just kind of resembles Houston. So the kolache program at Edo, it involves like the traditional. We do a beef sausage, jalapeno and cheddar kolache, which is like, I think, a staple. And then we do a ham and cheese kolache with just to kind of, you know, make people at the window comfortable in terms of what we can offer. And then the nihari kolache we have. We also do chicken tikka kolaches occasionally. We do different specials here and there.
We actually did a keema kolache last Saturday. My business partner made some keema for us. And, you know, we're just trying out different fillings because people have been really receptive to our South Asian flavors, which was really, really encouraging for us to, you know, take it a step forward and incorporate it in every possible way.
Yeah. And it feels good because the community has been so supportive in Edo, and it is so diverse with people coming in. And it's almost to the point where we feel a little, you know, just I would say, I mean, thankful is the least we could say. It's really cool to like dive into our heritage and not worrying about if it's going to be too spicy, too strong, too this, too that. Yeah. People really love it. They approach it. In fact, they kind of think that we're a little, maybe we're taming our culture. Maybe we should be a little bit stronger in it. But at the same time, you always want to entice people. You don't really want to like put a fistful of Indian food in their mouth, you know?
Which I think we are doing right now with the pita pockets, because today I went by and I was leaving and one of my customers stopped me and he was like, I have to say the pita pocket is one of the most underrated things you guys make here. Your pastries are great, but the pocket is just a it's just a bomb of flavors. And he was like so thoroughly surprised when he ate it. And I really appreciated that because we did put a lot of thought into every different element that goes into it. But to the point that I don't know if it's going to do well because they, you know, our customers can't really see it being assembled at the window. So it's really, you know, it's difficult to market a lunch from a walk-up window that has so many different components to it, I feel like.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's maybe one of the interesting ways that the business has evolved, because in the beginning, you know, you're trying to do a smash burger. And so to see you feel like you have enough of a relationship with your customers that you can, you know, serve South Asian food, I think that speaks well of how it's going.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I mean, we also have a very talented team at Ito that they are very consistent in their organization and their approach and their love and their passion that they can, I mean, we can have an idea tomorrow and they can implement it pretty much in real time within a day or two. And mm-hmm. that really, I think, makes a tremendous difference in terms of any type of strategy we want to go with.
Right.
Like, so in the beginning, I think our crazy product was like, you know, doing a Pano Chocolat, you know, because it was like, that was like the out there. And then
keeping up with three different types of pastries was a lot because it was just me and Elizabeth at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I like to think that I was trying my best helping them, but you know.
Well, Kirtan was making all the kolaches. He was doing the, yeah. the bodega breakfast sandwich it's one of our staples right now. People would kill me if I took it off the menu.
And just selfishly, because I think you make maybe the best blueberry muffin in Houston. Tell me what makes a good muffin.
I think it's as much fresh fruit you use rather than frozen or dried. And then also buttermilk. You can't skimp out on any of the ingredients. I see a lot of skimping out because people want a cheap muffin, but they don't want to. If you want a cheap muffin, that's what you're going to get. And I try to keep my costs as minimal as possible, but sometimes I just make less on a product because I don't want to skimp out on the ingredients. There's buttermilk, there's zest, there's a really crunchy streusel on top. There's fresh blueberries that we buy every 3 days. So it's just certain things that I don't like to compromise on. I don't care if I make a dollar less. I don't want to compromise on any of my products.
And I think that's pretty fair. That's our whole mantra with this whole organization, because, you know, we're not a big corporation. You know, Kripa, myself, and two other people own the entirety of Ito. So because of that, we're allowed to dig into our pockets and do it because we're not sacrificing like public shareholders, anything like that, or investors. Yeah. It's pretty much us. So we have that flexibility to kind of, you know, make slight sacrifices here and there.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, if people want, you know, cheap breakfast pastries, you know, there's any number of donut shops, grocery stores, Costco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't blame you for not wanting to try to beat people on price, because you're never going to be cheaper than HEB.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. There's like this,
they have the buying power too, right? They have the buying power. They have the customer base. So they know even if they make a product super cheap, they can make up for it in volume. So I think that they're very different business models, and people that do complain about small business pricing, I think they just don't know all the work, the blood, sweat, and tears that go behind a product. But, you know, that's a constant battle that we are always going to fight.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to Auden, because that is kind of the more fine dining, the more chef-y of the two concepts. So how did you kind of develop that concept, and how did it kind of become what it is today?
Well, I think it first started, I think the idea of Auden started with six friends coming together. And, you know, we would go out to different restaurants here and there, have dinner parties at our house, good wine, good drinks, you know. And we were like, hey, this is what a place should be like in Houston, in the sense, you know, where we don't necessarily have to think about the quality of this or getting exposed to this. And I think that's like the best way. I mean, it's not a literary reference at all. It's not after W.H. Auden. It's Auden is an old Dutch English dialect, meaning old friend. So that was the idea, that you're dining amongst friends, having a pint or a glass of wine and something good to eat.
Yeah. And then I guess Kripa, talk about it from your end. I mean, kind of, you know, it's a very sort of dough focused restaurant. So talk a little bit about kind of your contributions to the menu.
I think it started off as fine dining technique, but a more casual approach to the menu. But I did say we did blur some lines in the beginning because we were just trying to survive. First of all, being pregnant and opening a restaurant, there was a certain narrative that was, I don't know, in the press about us being fine dining when we did not intend to be. So we were trying to kind of steer clear of that too, because when people hear fine dining, there's a certain expectation. There's certain plating that's expected. There's certain menus, pricing that's expected. And we were trying to kind of like step away from that for the longest time possible. So I was trying to do French entremets and pastries and not have it look as fine dining as we were supposed to be, but technically steering clear of. So it was a huge battle for me because my plating was pretty formal. And I was trying to keep it as casual as possible just so that people don't get intimidated by, you know, what they see or just like the location or, you know, just be as inviting. Like Kirtan said, you want to go out with your friends, just grab a pint or a glass of wine and have some shared plates. And I feel like that's what we were struggling with in the beginning. But now I think we found a more casual approach to everything with our, you know, very approachable happy hour, just making sure that the plates are more shareable. Like, you know, these things we learn as we go because we haven't done this a long time. This is literally our first baby. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Kirtan, talk about that because, you know, looking at the menu now versus when you opened about a year and a half ago, it is less expensive and it is more diverse in its sort of range of options. So say a little more about that evolution and kind of finding, you know, what Auden is from your perspective and also like in a way that what your customers expect.
Well, I think so Kripa and I have this natural personality of just, you know, maybe I don't want to call it intuition, but you have this thing in the back of your head that you want people to like you. You want people to, you know, you want to make people comfortable. Like, let's say we're in a room or let's say it's the first time we met, you know, I'm going to have this anxiety goal in my head. Okay, does Eric like me? When he leaves, will he be like, okay, is Kirtan a good person? You know, and it sounds extremely insecure because it is. So because I think we were just, because this was such a huge concept, like this is not Edo in a bakery. Like tomorrow I can decide we're only going to serve jerk chicken at Edo. And, you know, we can do it because Kripa and I pretty much own a majority of it, right? But with Auden, it's like you have this imposter syndrome compounded with, okay, I have to make my managing partners happy. I have to make my investors happy. You start to create this utilitarian goal. What is the average food menu items on, you know, comparable, likable restaurants in Houston? You try to do that. You try to figure out, okay, I don't want to go too crazy here. I don't want to take a lot of risks. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And then in doing so, what happened was, and not that, like, we've never been not proud of the food that we were cooking at Auden, but I think now we can genuinely say that Auden is a true representation of Kripa and myself, where you walk into Auden, you get a plate, even from the service now, whereas, you know, we're training the servers to kind of be themselves, show their own personalities out. Just relax, you know? I mean, even if someone had the worst meal of their life or the best meal, they're still going to be hungry in 3 hours. So we just have to make sure that, you know, you don't take it too personally. Just take everything professionally, you know? The imposter syndrome, I think, is gone now after a year and a half. It's just pretty much, hey, I can't control how many people walk in, but as they sit at Auden and leave, we can control if they're happy or not. And that's just the only goal. We don't take it too personally.
Yeah. I mean, Kripa, you know, from your perspective, what do you think about kind of the current state of the restaurant and how it's going and how it's perceived?
I will say, like Kirtan said, it was a huge combination of the imposter syndrome and insecurity in the beginning. We have a tendency to people please a lot. And then given the fact that we were that young, we were trying to do something new. It was really intimidating having investors and, you know, managing partners with a lot of opinions back and forth. I think we let that dictate our menu for the longest time. And that's where we, I think, faulted. I think now that we said, hey, I think, you know, this is what we want to do with the menu. These are certain things that we kind of like drew a line with and put our foot down with, I think really helped us gain that momentum with customers and gain their trust, because I think it shows that we're not trying to just please people that live around River Oaks anymore. Like, we're actually just trying to do what we like doing and what we think is a good execution of a dish. So I think that that's the direction we chose eventually.
Well, and I think that location is so interesting because you were really the first restaurant in Autry Park to open. And then over the last year, I mean, there's so many more, you know, Annabelle, Turner's Cut, MF mm-hmm. Lobster, you know, now Doko most recently. It you know, I think in the beginning, I'm not even sure people really knew what Autry Park was or where it was. And now, you know, I think they're more used to coming there.
I completely 100% agree that we definitely had issues being out there, putting a word out, just because the location was so new. And, you know, we were the first people to open in pretty much a ghost town at that point. There was nothing open around us. I think maybe we should have taken a little longer to open, and that would really help us get some more footing with people in Houston, you know, just take some time to get to know the area, just, you know, maneuver through the, just basically driving into Autry Park and parking and everything was a complicated concept initially. And now I think, you know, like you said, with all the new restaurants that have opened, people are more familiar and they're coming out more. So yeah, like you said, I think it would have changed a few things for us if we had possibly opened with the rest of them.
All right. So, you know, you've been open for about a year and a half. What are your goals? Like, where would you like to be, you know, in the fall when you're at your second anniversary?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the past 4 months have been really rejuvenating for Kripa and myself, because we kind of stopped putting so much emphasis on, you know, I would say the financial goals or this and that, because they would just contribute to stress with us. I think where we're at, or where we would like to see goal-wise, is just continuing that journey into just exposing like ourselves in the most responsible way. That's a goal of mine. You know, the more days that do pass at Auden, I would like it to be more of a, you know, kind of area of comfort. You know, you come in and then that experience for the customer. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say like, okay, I want to see revenue at so-and-so here. I would like to see, you know, this happen or this happen. You know, it's not really our thought mentality with Auden.
So what are your kind of future plans? I mean, do you, you know, you have two very distinct concepts, right? You have your casual bakery cafe, you have your more elevated neighborhood restaurant. I mean, are there other styles of restaurant you are interested in trying out? Are there parts of Houston that you think would be particularly hospitable to you? I mean, what, you know, where would you like to be, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road?
I mean, we have a dream, Kripa and I, of owning our own dive bar. That's like a thing that I would really like. And I'm not sure if this term is offensive or not, but you know how you have that faux dive concept now where you spend like $10 million to make it look like a piece of crap. But the aspect is, I want to see like carpet on the ground, broken Tiffany billiard lights. You know, I want to see a bartender that probably has more tattoos than hair. You know, like I just want to see this area of comfort that you can always patron and kind of be like that. To be a local watering hole in a neighborhood is like that would be my dream.
All right, Kripa, what is your vision of a dive bar, or what are a couple of the bars that you would take some inspiration from if you bring this concept to life?
I think Poison Girl, is that it, in Montrose, is one of our favorites. And then there's this really like small, cute Irish bar called Pimlico close by. You know, things that are bars that are very approachable and very casual, I feel like, are our jam. I just want to have a really small setup where, you know, the bartender could be the server, where we're cooking in the kitchen, you know, we're making small plates, we have really casual, approachable drinks, you know, like where we change the menu every month, you know, something that we can control and we can basically execute very easily without depending on a whole like 50% staff.
Yeah, I think that would be, it'd be cool. It'd be cool to go to work every day knowing that, you know, hey, it's, we got 8 things on the menu. Let's rock it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could bring back that, you know, you could do a chicken tikka, you know, rice bowl alongside, you could bring that smash burger back. You'd be in,
yeah,
it'd be very Houston. You'd be in pretty good shape.
I think so too.
And there's a lot of things like, you know, now, if you asked me like 5 years ago, like, hey, we're going to spend $20 on a cocktail, I'd be like, you're out of your mind. But that's like, I think like the industry standard now when you kind of go out. At Auden, we try our best to keep our costs down so we can provide $12 to $15 cocktails. And even like in my heart, I feel like that's expensive, you know, but it's just one of those things where, you know, you go to any bar. I mean, the bars that you see like regulars at, and, you know, you're spending $7 to $15 for a drink. And I think that that's a comfort level that I would like to replicate with food as well. You know, it's like it's to a point where, I mean, Kripa and I probably DoorDash more than cook at home because we're always in the kitchen. And I think
I cook more because Kiara's eating solids, but
yeah, our daughter's name is Kiara, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if we mentioned that. I think, but going back to like inspirational places, I mean, Pimlico, I think it's a pretty cool bar. I think Kripa mentioned Poison Girl. I used to like Boondocks back in the day, Grand Prize. You know, these are places that it really, you just, when you walk in, you're like, okay, let me just relax and get a drink, you know? And don't get me wrong, we love going to, you know, Bandista, Clarkwood, you know, we haven't been to Melrose yet.
Refuge, yeah, Anvil.
I love going to those places. I mean, yeah. To me, Anvil's the best bar I've ever been to in the world, in terms of their selection, their attention to detail, their craft,
yeah.
Service. I, you know, I think that because it's in a city like Houston, and I think people overlook it at times, but that is probably one of my, I think if you gave me a definition of the perfect bar, Anvil would always be number one.
Well, and I think sometimes as Houstonians, you know, it's been here for more than 15 years at this point. So, you know, we may take it for granted without properly appreciating it, you know, but the one thing I will say, you know, when Bobby Hugel has been on the show, he's talked a lot about, you know, really aggressively priced happy hour. And, you know, from a consumer perspective, even, you know, when it's not happy hour, you know, you mentioned cocktail pricing, you know, if that drink is $12, $13, $14, I'm a whole lot more likely as a diner to order a second one than when they're $17, $18, $20, $22. Right. Even I've seen occasionally, yeah. It's like, you know, you can shear me many times at $13. You can only skin me once at $19.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. So like everyone has different business models, you know. I mean, we were told one thing. I think like, I mean, Kripa, I think they told us that we should have our cocktail cost at 12 to 15%. Some people are like, you should do 50% because then no one's going to buy it. So like everyone has their own, I guess, method to their madness, right? You know, so our goal is to always kind of keep our cocktails around, I would say, the 20-25% rule at Auden, just because if we, you know, we're not sure, like in reality, just honestly speaking, I mean, I want to be able to have some sleep at night. I want to be comfortable. And I think knowing that, okay, well, if something costs like $1 or $2, then I don't feel comfortable selling it for more than $8-$9, right? At some point I'm like, okay, you're pretty much making too much money off of this, right? So
yeah.
It's just one of those things. A food, I think, is like very close to that, but obviously with food costs are genuinely a lot higher now because of,
oh,
just
my god,
how everything
started with eggs. Yes,
yeah, like how everything is. I think when we first opened up Edo, each egg cost us 22 cents, and now sometimes
it was lesser. It was way cheaper, yeah.
And I think now it's like almost triple the price.
Yeah.
So we kind of have to like use a combination between, using, we have to change vendors for eggs all the time because everyone's being
everything's
competitive.
Gone up though. It's chocolate, it's butter, everything imported obviously has gone up too. So it's just a matter of, you know, we have loss leaders on the menu, and then we have certain items that will have like a higher margin. So they kind of make up for each other. We can't have everything priced at 25%. Sometimes because of, given the nature of what people will buy versus what they want, some things we just don't make money off of, and then some things we make money off of, and they kind of balance each other out.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Well, I do have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Why don't you give me the websites and the social media pages for both Edo and Auden? How can people stay in touch with you?
Well, for Edo, it's edo.com. And our Instagram handle is at Edo, EadoughHTX. And then with Auden, it's audenrestaurant.com. Correct, Kirtan?
Yeah.
And the Instagram is at Auden, AudenHTX as well.
Kirtan and Kripa, thank you so much for doing this.
No, thanks, Eric. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Eric. It was great catching up.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.